Now, get ready to spend the next 2 hours with our three sports-loving ladies. Mia O'Brien, Lauren Brooks, and Taylor Dahl.
This is Helmets and Heels
on 1010XL, switched on by First Coast Lighting and Fans. Upscale lighting, fans, and home decor. Show me what you got, Bert Lady.
Welcome into Helmets and Heels on this Wednesday afternoon. Ladies, I feel like people are starting to come around on that Mason Smith pick. Maybe it's because we had Matt Moscona on yesterday. Maybe it's just because people are diving more into his stats from before he got hurt. But I feel like people were so negative, and now it's starting to turn a little positive. I like the positivity.
Maybe it's because people's bad NBA takes are taking over the timeline instead, including my own. I won't mention other 1010XL hosts who may or may not have been getting roast in between the handoff between Jaguars today and us. The thought has shifted not only to other sports, Lauren, but also to, hey, you know what, maybe this isn't a reach, although I know Jaguars today just spent the bulk of the last 2 hours examining if Trent Baalke is indeed, what was the name they used? John Reacher, something like that. apparently now that's what people want to start calling Trent Baalke.
Jack Reacher.
Jack Reacher. I think that what's also needs to be noted is this consensus board, right? And with all due respect to whoever came up with it, who I'm sure is either a great analyst, a great writer, a great former scout, but this is the first year that I'm hearing about this consensus board, the amount of times that I have. And
being like the Bible, basically.
Yes. Yeah. And if it does, like it used to be like the columnist would sit there in the media room on draft weekend and say, you know, Brugler had him at this.
He's my consensus
board.
Right,
correct. But now we have the consensus board. And if you don't follow the consensus board, then you are dumb. I did appreciate that Jeff Prosser made the point that Matt Miller put together his top 100 picks on ESPN.com of just, you know, it doesn't have to be top like 100, 1 to 100, but sure, like best fits. And the Jaguars had one of those 100 picks. So look, the national bias continues. I think everybody listening driving around Duval County right now knows full and well that that exists. And if anything, I think that's where this team has thrived over the last 2 years under Doug Peterson is when everyone is counting them out. And that's not a bad thing. I think that this team enjoys being the underdog more than they do the front runner. I think that's when they are at their best.
I think that's well said because we've certainly seen, Taylor, this team when talked about as being things like, oh, they could have the number one overall seed and they're just going to, you know, be as good as they were the previous year when they made it to the quote-unquote Elite Eight in the NFL. Well, things didn't go according to plan when that happened and they started 8-3 and all those fun things.
Yeah, I mean, I think that maybe it's a situation when you're used to being in that underdog position, you become a little more comfortable in it. And it is a weird aspect because if we're going to go back and with the draft, for example, and say, okay, well, you know, the history of the missed wide receiver isn't this regime, then we also have to stop eventually using that in general too, because if you think that this regime is going to draft different and does different, you know, does better in free agency and is supposed to be the next good thing for the Jaguars, then you have to stop holding on to some of those things of like, well, historically they always do this. Yeah. It's hard to do though. It really is, because your brain gets trained for so long that, okay, you know, like you'll have a good season and then things just kind of fall apart, and then you have a good season and things kind of fall apart. And so I think a lot of people are just a little hesitant at times. And I think, and I mentioned that the other day about even the draft picks of like, I think there are definitely some that hate them, but I think that the people that aren't a big fan of them are more so just hesitant because it hasn't been quite proven that Baalke's been able to find these gems in the second, third round. So it's still that like history of Baalke's drafting hasn't worked out the way he's wanted it to work out. And so people are hesitant for it. That doesn't mean that they absolutely hate the pick and they think it's the worst thing in the world. But I mean, we just a few weeks ago went over a whole list of who, you know, what draft guys have been the most accurate and what position group. So we did the same thing, and that's what a consensus is of, it's just we went through all the different levels, and honestly I hadn't gone back and looked at that, but it probably would be interesting to go look at those specific ones and which position groups that were the most accurate for those guys and see which ones they had the Jags picking, etc., because it you know, obviously that's a 5-year history of data that's been kind of shown to prove accuracy. So that'd be interesting. I haven't gone back to look, but I think for most people, it's more so that. It's just they don't quite trust Trent Baalke's drafting, and they have the right to not quite trust Trent Baalke's drafting. So until there's proven otherwise, and until you have more than one great season that you're excited about, then I think it's going to be that. But I do think that, let's say Baalke comes in and the Jags are back and win the South again, and then next year they do it, things will start to fade away from that mindset around him, and people can start to believe otherwise.
The Jaguars, as far as the players that they got from the SEC, we will break down that with Alyssa Lang from SEC Network. She will join us in under 10 minutes. Super excited to talk to her. She was a part of Helmets and Heels way back when she lived here in Jacksonville. Obviously now lives up in Charlotte. As far as the overall from what Dane Brugler has to say, since we just referenced him, Mia, this is what he had to say about Mason Smith in The Beast. Smith is a traits-based prospect with his size, movement skills, and pop-it contact, but his inexperience is evident on tape. With his inconsistent technique, block recognition, and rush play, and NFL teams covet 6'5", 300-pound athletes on the defensive line, and those types are in short supply in this draft class, which will only boost Smith's draft projection. He had him as his sixth defensive tackle.
It's the Earth theory. There's not many of these human beings walking around planet Earth with the measurables that Mason Smith possesses. I think that what we also have to note as we talk about consensus board and this person's analysis and that person's analysis, thank you to the YouTube chat line. Floyd and Hef are speaking gospel over at the MyBookie Digital Studio. It will never make sense because there are 32 different teams who run 32 different schemes and philosophies and thus 32 different boards.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That's what we've talked about.
The Jacksonville Jaguars knew that with Ryan Nielsen's scheme, knowing it's multiple fronts, knowing it's a press man cover defense on the back end, they needed to target press man corners. They also knew that because they are going to be shifting from a predominantly 3-4 defense to a 4-3 defense, and knowing that Trent Baalke issued the ultimatum in January that they wanted to get tougher in the weight room, they wanted to get tougher in the trenches, they had to go out and get three 300-plus pounders within their first five picks because that's the identity. Everyone this morning that I listened to, whether it was, you know, the aforementioned Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks, our good buddy, who, of course, is the Jags sideline reporter on Move the Sticks on ESPN, everyone is praising the Pittsburgh Steelers for going back to their identity, going back to their bread and butter, getting tough physical guys, whether it's the three offensive linemen they drafted, Peyton Wilson, Roman Wilson, getting guys that fit that identity. And we spent so much time on primetime before Helmets and Heels became your daily program from 12 to 2 when I was a part of it. We spent so much time talking about what is the Jags' identity. They don't have one. And that's you can't knock Trent Baalke for that. You can't knock Doug Peterson for that. They've only been here 2 years. Trent, I understand, has been here, you know, 3.5 years. The Pittsburgh Steelers have had that identity since Leon was playing for them and was drafted by them in 1991. So, therefore, you can't say that when Trent says, this is the type of player we're looking for, and then follows that to a T, that therefore he's reaching. This is the type of player he said that this team needed, and those are the type of players he went out and got.
But that's too logical, Taylor. That's too logical for people.
Yeah, and I think that when you go to, because I think that people don't know what the identity is, it'd be different if it was a set thing and they were like, okay, because I feel like certain, and that's where everyone is. I think the last couple years, and we've talked about it a lot, is you don't really know what this team is. And even halfway through the first half of last season compared to the second half of last season, each of the sides of ball looked like two different teams at one point. And yes, injuries played a factor in that, at least on the offensive side of the ball. But I think that for a lot of people, they see all, and especially because we get so engulfed in the draft and we have so much access to so much everything now, and I think that plays such a big part in it, because you can go look at all of these boards, you can go read the scouting reports, you can go watch film on all of these guys, and when you're sitting there and you're doing all of your mock drafts and you're seeing everybody else's, all the big guys with Daniel Jeremiah, Mel Kiper, and all of these guys' mock drafts come out, and there's guys still sitting on the board that have been talked about being some of the top players in the draft, and you go elsewhere, that's where concern comes in. But it doesn't mean, like, it, you know, if he feels like this is the best fit for what they have and not a guy maybe like Chris Jenkins, who a lot of people talked about, Michael Hall, both, they had the chance to draft both of those guys and skipped on them for these other ones. I think that's where people's concern comes in. But there's obviously something Ryan Nielsen and Balke have seen in these players that they like, that they do feel like will fit, even though maybe they're going to be rotational and not starters for a little while. They feel like they can develop these guys and they can be a piece of the defense in the future.
Two things to that. Onboarding, which is a magical word I think we're going to spend a lot of time on over the next few months. And number two, Taylor, because I thought the same thing as I left the draft on Friday night. Chris Jenkins, Michael Hall have played 4 to 5 years in college football. In terms of tread on the tires, we saw it with the Trayvon Walker pick over Aiden Hutchinson was one of the variables as to why he was the number one overall pick. We haven't been able to hit a whole lot of that since we took over this 12-2 time slot, ladies. But what better time than now to do so?
That just happened. Brought to you by Florida Home AC, the official air conditioning partner of the Jacksonville Jaguars.
So there was a Twitter account that leaked this late last night, but now the Jaguars official account has tweeted it, so now we can take it as gospel. The new jersey numbers nice. For the Jaguars' new acquisitions, let's run through them. You probably saw Eric Armstead will wear number 91 as he auctioned off the first ever Armstead number 91 in a Jaguars uniform jersey off at his foundation event earlier last month, since we're officially in May, ladies. Ronald Darby will wear number 25. Gabe Davis, the new number 0. Josiah DeGuara, 81. Mac Jones retains the number 10. Devin Duvernay will wear 12. Should be noted, D'Ernest Johnson has given up his number. He's going to be number 2 now, which is interesting. Travis Gibson will wear 50. Mitch Morse will wear 65, the first player to wear that since friend of the program Brandon Linder. Riley Patterson, number 38. And Darnell Savage, number 6. We also have the rookie numbers, although they haven't actually posted them, but those were leaked, and so I'm sure at some point in the next few minutes, the Jaguars will also release those rookie numbers too, which I do like. If the reports are true, you're going to have Riley Patterson wearing 38, and you're going to have Cam Little wearing 39, which, I mean, hey, listen, power to the kickers that they want to go outside the norm. Mm-hmm. Cam Little wore 29 at Arkansas, so let's get a little weird with it. I'm here for it.
Yeah, I think that's fun. It's very interesting to me that Gabe Davis is going to wear 0 because mm-hmm. that was Calvin Ridley's number. Everyone called him Agent 0.
Yeah,
he was only here for a season, so it's not like he's taking a number that I feel like, you know, was ever going to be hung up at any yeah. point in time. But it is just
we just started getting that 0 too.
Yeah,
so just last year was the first year.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm very interested to see what number Brian Thomas Jr. will wear.
Yeah.
Is that going to be his LSU number 11? Did Parker Washington give that up? Or is Parker Washington going to keep it and Brian Thomas Jr. going to wear something else? That's what the Jaguars have not officially unveiled yet.
So if this NFL _num account is to be taken at truth, which it's been pretty much 100% thus far, they have Brian Thomas Jr. wearing number 80. Shout out to Kevin Austin. As Justin Lewis of the Times Union already pointed out, UFL All-Pro. But yeah, he would wear number 80, which I see DJ Dell on the text line brought to you by Lifetime Enclosures saying he just needs that BTJ number 11 jersey for his son, please, Parker. So there's other people in your camp, Lauren.
And I understand rookies don't always get the decision, but the guy who's wearing it is just a second-year player. Yeah. And so that's where it's like, well, I don't know that this is somebody who's been cemented in Jacksonville long enough to be like, no, I need to keep this
And it
number.
Wasn't a Puka Nacua type of rookie season.
No,
so.
No.
If it was maybe I'd be like, look.
Yeah, he obviously had to step in when Christian Kirk got hurt, but things didn't always go according to plan as far as that's concerned. As we know, he didn't know exactly where he was supposed to be at one point in time, and that was one of the plays where Trevor Lawrence got hurt. But that was just one of many plays, I should say, where Trevor Lawrence got hurt last season. So we will talk more Jaguars as the show continues. I want to find out from you ladies which position group on this football team that you think is the position group that you are most concerned about. And certainly there are several to choose from, so we will get into that. But right now we're going to welcome in our good friend Alyssa Lang of SEC Network. Alyssa, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, ladies, for having me. It's great to be back on with you guys. I miss y'all. I miss Jacksonville. So I'm pumped we're doing this today.
It was funny, kind of like our friend Laura Rutledge, your friend as well, Alyssa, who joined us a few weeks ago. I said to Taylor this morning, I was like, all the honorary Jacksonvillians get to join Helmets and Heels in its first month of this iteration. So we're happy to have you on, happy to talk a little Duval, because as I've told numerous people at 1010XL today, when I let them know you'd be joining us on the All-Pro Roofing Hotline, I reminded them that you had the opportunity to call quite a few LSU games and quite a few Missouri games. And so as we talk about the three LSU titles, Tigers who will be making their way to Jacksonville. You also have some insight on Javon Foster, so let's begin with him because we've spent so much time on the Tigers, but not nearly enough on the Mizzou Tiger, who's also joining the Jaguars.
Yeah, you know, this is a Missouri team that, top to bottom, Javon Foster included, took so many of us by surprise last season. I don't think any of us sitting there in July at SEC Media Days preparing for the start of the season would have predicted Missouri to eventually have the year that they had going on and winning the Cotton Bowl against Ohio State. Just what they accomplished as a team last season was really fun to watch. Now, Javon Foster and that entire line was a huge part of that, right? I mean, what Missouri did on both sides of the football last year from a growth standpoint was really big. And you know, I think from before kind of diving into Javon specifically, you know, I look at the group of guys that Eli Drinkwitz recruited for him to come play in Como, and this was not a team that was necessarily ravaged by the transfer portal. This group was one of those groups who really believed in the process of what they were building out there in Mizzou, and a big part of that was the growth of this offense as a whole. So that leads me to the offensive line and to Brady Cook and just the steps forward that they took this past season. You know, this was a Missouri offense that underwent some changes. Eli Drinkwitz at the end of the 2022 season deciding that he was going to give up play calling and ultimately hand the keys over to new offensive coordinator Kirby Moore. There were pieces that were shuffled around, but this was an offensive line that was really impressive throughout the course of the season. Brady Cook's, I think, numbers just as a quarterback individually would back that up, just the steps that he took from 2022 to 2023. And the protection that we saw consistently from Missouri was a huge part of that. It's a great pick. Obviously, anytime you can add a talented O-lineman, especially for a team like Jacksonville, to continue to help protect Trevor Lawrence and build some depth at that position, that's going to be a big deal. But Javon Foster, part of a unit that as last season went on, we just had so much trust in the consistency that they were going to bring to the table every single week. And obviously Foster was a huge part of that.
Alyssa, have you ever interviewed Cam Little, the kicker from Arkansas?
I have not, but I have had plenty of conversations with people about him. Sam Pittman, obviously, first and foremost, his former head coach there at Arkansas. I've heard he's quite the character. I've heard, you know, he's a great teammate. He's a guy that obviously has had plenty of opportunities over the past couple of years. But I have not gotten to talk to him personally, no.
How would you rate his gritty against LSU 2 years ago or three years ago?
A 10 out of 10.
Yes.
10 out of 10. I give him a 10 out of 10. Genuinely just for trying, because I have tried to like duck and dodge being put on the spot to do the gritty on television, and I will do everything I can to not have to do that. So the fact that he did it willingly and you know, like he did a pretty good job. So hopefully we see that on the field in Jacksonville too.
I love it. I definitely try to avoid doing that also, Alyssa. When we're talking about kickers, because I think that some people get a little upset when you draft a kicker because they say there's so many of them. But I also think if you go through history and you go back and you see some of the best kickers we talk about, they are drafted guys. What are your thoughts on that? And especially when we're looking at the SEC and all of the guys that were drafted anyways, another record high of SEC guys drafted. So what are your thoughts on kind of those two things?
Yeah, I'll start with the kicker part of it. You know, it is funny because we get to the month of the draft, and obviously the conversation that or the part of the conversation that's sort of dominating the headlines is whatever position group is really strong that year, right? So we had plenty of that with the wide receiver group this past week, and then, you know, what the quarterback order would end up being. But it is those positions like kicker, some of those special teams guys that nobody really wants to focus on until maybe a game comes down to it deep into the season and you're going, oh man, yeah, thank God we have this guy that we can rely on when it comes to special teams. So I'm never opposed to taking a guy like that who you think is going to obviously bolster you at that position and be somebody that you can rely on, because nobody wants to have an unreliable kicker, unreliable special teams guy in any facet. So I'm good with that. And then to your second point, you know, the SEC for what the past gosh, I should know this right off the top of my head, 15, 16 seasons, the SEC, I believe, has led all conferences in total players drafted. And it is a testament to probably what bothers a lot of the rest of the country when people like me get on TV every single fall and talk about why this is the best conference in the country. And even though you're looking at maybe a mid-level SEC team, that team could probably go find a pretty good amount of success in another conference just because you're going up against the best of the best consistently every single week. I mean, I'm looking at the total number of names drafted between Alabama and Georgia. Those are not surprising. But I'm looking at a team like Auburn, who didn't really do much this past season, had a shocking loss the week before the Iron Bowl, and they had one, two, three, four, five guys drafted in this past draft cycle. It's just, again, the numbers are there. The relativity can be hard sometimes to measure against the rest of the country. I was right there, and I know that we're in Florida right now, and maybe this shouldn't be something that I say on y'all's airwaves, but I was right there saying that, hey, if you have eyeballs, Georgia is better than Florida State when we were having this college football playoff conversation last season. I understand that they lost the SEC championship, but this is why we play the game. You have to be able to see that. And I know plenty of people disagree with me on that, and we'll argue that until the end of time. But I think the draft cycles are just another source of proof that the SEC is the dominant conference when it comes to college football. There's a reason why so many of the last national championships have come from the SEC. And again, there's a reason why the SEC cleans up when it comes to draft time and guys end up being huge pieces to their new teams. And that's no exception there in Jacksonville.
You are music to the dog fans' ears right now, Alyssa. So I wouldn't worry. Even if the Noles fans aren't too happy with you, it's okay. We know who's paying the checks, I should say, or writing the bills. For you. So it's all good. It's all good. Alyssa Lang of the SEC Network joining us on the All Pro Roofing Hotline. And it's time. Let's talk about the fact that Trent Baalke said, you know what? I like what LSU's cooking. I like what Brian Kelly's doing. I like BTJ. You know what? I know that defense was the worst in LSU's history, but we're going to pluck not one, but two guys from along that defensive front. We can go through all three, Alyssa. We can go big picture here. Were you surprised to see three players for only the seventh time in NFL history from one institution go to one team in the NFL in the Jacksonville Jaguars?
I was not, because when you look at who the players are, I sat back and I said, okay, like, this is a good pick. And I think we should start with Mason Smith, because I think you make a great point about that defense being so abysmal last season and being truly the reason why LSU was not in the conversation for an SEC championship or the postseason. I cannot imagine how much it must have driven Jaden Daniels and this LSU offense absolutely insane last year to know that we're putting up record-breaking numbers almost consistently and our defense just can't get one stop, is how it felt all season long. So Mason Smith, obviously a huge part of that LSU defense and that LSU defensive front. I could see how Jags fans potentially at first were going, well, hang on a second. The numbers don't look that flashy from what Mason Smith did during his career in Baton Rouge. Well, you have to remember he was injured and missed the entirety of the 2022 season, right? Just a little bit into that opener against Florida State. He was suspended for the first game to start the year last year, but this was a guy who wowed us his freshman year, came out like a bat out of hell the moment we saw him in an LSU uniform. You put together the measurables, you put together the size, and this is a guy who I'm not surprised at all that the NFL would sit there and go, we can make him an unbelievably good player at this next level. Even though the sample size wasn't that big from a college standpoint, he checks so many other boxes. And there were plenty of problems for LSU's defense last year, right? They had to bring Pete Jenkins in halfway through the season to coach up that defensive line. There were bigger problems than just Mason Smith, right? It wasn't that he was an issue or an overarching reason why LSU's defense wasn't what it needed to be. But I think with more consistent coaching, I think with what he will get in that building in Jacksonville, he is going to be a pro we could be talking about causing, wreaking havoc within the first few years of his career. You mentioned Jordan Jefferson as well. I think everything I said there could kind of be copy and pasted to what we saw from Jordan Jefferson, minus the specificities with some of the injury timelines and things like that. But if you're going to go even get recruited to play defensive line at LSU, you better be big, you better be strong, you better have some quick twitchiness. So all of that always translates to the next level. Now on the other side, with Brian Thomas Jr. adding hopefully a significant amount of strength to that wide receiver room in Jacksonville, especially with some of the departures since the end of last season, Brian Thomas Jr. is a guy who came in very highly recruited. We knew as soon as he put the LSU jersey on that he was going to be a playmaker, and he continued to do that consistently, not even as wide receiver one, but with Malik Nabers also on the field with him, right? So when you look at what that offense was between Brian Thomas Jr., Malik Nabers, and Jaden Daniels being the one distributing the football, the style of offense that they run, that feels very pro-ready to me, him knowing what he brings to the table, who's, hey, I'm not necessarily Malik Nabers, but I'm a guy who's got unbelievable speed. Julio Jones was a guy that he looked up to growing up and wanted to be like. He can create unbelievable separation, breaking in and out of his route. So I would expect of all of the draft picks, obviously, you would want Brian Thomas Jr., your first rounder, to be that guy who makes the splash immediately. I think Jags fans are going to fall in love with him.
And they are certainly very excited already based off of everything you said and everything they've seen from him. Alyssa Lang with us from the SEC Network on the All-Pro Roofing Hotline. Alyssa, we all know it's going to go in the SEC, Georgia 1, Texas 2, I think across the board when it comes to ranking these teams before the season starts. Who do you see as 3, 4, and 5 in that top group? Is it still Alabama? Who do you have there?
Ooh, that's such a good question. Yeah, I'm still tossing kind of in a toss-up of my own between Georgia and Texas, to your point. Someone asked me the other day about Heisman favorites this season, and between Quinn Ewers, Carson Beck, it's a really interesting conversation to have. I might throw Ole Miss at 3 right now, just because everything that they have done in the transfer portal over the last few months. Jackson Dart is back. He brings Trey Harris back, his favorite wide receiver from last season. Those two had some unbelievable connections throughout the course of the season. They add Juice Wells out of the transfer portal from South Carolina. Now, Juice Wells was out for most of the year last year with an injury. Assuming he's healthy and back to the Juice Wells that we saw in 2022, that could be a really dangerous offense out there at Ole Miss. I believe they return most of their starting O-line as well in Oxford. So they would definitely have to be in my top three. You know, going back to Missouri, they're not going to fly under the radar as much this year, certainly. They're going to have more of a target on their back based off of what they did a season ago, and we already sort of talked a little bit about that. I don't know that I'm going to put them over Alabama, because I still think Alabama has to be in that 2-4 range just because they're Alabama. There's still plenty of Nick Saban-recruited guys who are on that squad. But I wouldn't be surprised to see Missouri creeping up maybe even a little bit closer to being one of those top five teams in the SEC this season. They haven't lost a lot. Obviously, they lose several guys to the NFL draft this past season, but you look at what they return offensively, some of the receivers and Luther Burden, who may make a case for being one of the best receivers in the country this upcoming season. Brady Cook is back, and if Brady Cook can build off of the season that he just had a year ago, I would buy Missouri stock. Again, Alabama is sort of just like goes without saying for me, especially with Jalen Milroe being back and some of the other pieces they have added as well. If we're going to talk surprise team, and again, this is not me sucking up to the listening audience, I promise. I said this on my own radio show on SiriusXM yesterday. I'm not putting them top five, but I wouldn't be surprised if Florida messed some people up this season. I would not be surprised if we were talking about the Gators in a different light than we were halfway through the year last year. I know the schedule is brutal, but I think some of what makes the schedule so brutal is the brand name of some of these programs that maybe aren't as good as the name would indicate when you're going through the schedule, right? Graham Mertz being back for his second year, the steps forward that you take as a college quarterback from year one to year two, you cannot put a price tag on that. listening and watching Graham Mertz at the Florida spring game, the confidence oozing out of him got me so excited for what we could see in Gainesville. Bring back Trey Wilson and some of those other pieces that he developed great chemistry with down the course of the season last year. I'm really cautiously optimistic that Florida could prove a lot of people wrong last year and this year. I know that wasn't part of the question, but I had to sneak that in there.
Hey, we love it, especially me, obviously, yeah. Alyssa.
Mainly Lauren. But when we talk about Lauren, I mean, Alyssa, as we are kind of in this zoomed out perspective, the SEC as a whole, there's some really cool storylines, and you spoke on Missouri. You're talking about Graham Mertz in Florida, and also in that same breath, you're kind of talking about, is Billy Napier on the hot seat? But additions of Texas and Oklahoma, departure of Coach Nick Saban. What is your favorite storyline heading into the season?
Oh, man, that is such a tough question because you just ripped through so many that are so exciting, right? I think Texas and Oklahoma probably has to take the cake. We're going to be very busy over at the SEC Network on July 1st. That is the date that we're officially welcoming Texas and Oklahoma into the conference. So there's going to be a ton of fanfare there, a ton of excitement, because it's not just college football that they really raise the level of, right? We're right in the middle of baseball and softball season. And when you look at what both of those programs bring to the Southeastern Conference from a baseball and softball standpoint, I mean, you can't talk college softball without talking about Oklahoma, right? We're staring down Oklahoma City coming up here in just a couple of weeks, and they're almost always in the conversation when it comes to a Women's College World Series, Texas baseball, and what they are, as well as Oklahoma. So it's not just college football that we're so excited about, but that's definitely a big one. I'm also excited to see a new sort of crop, if you will, of starting quarterbacks in the SEC. Tennessee's going to have a brand new starting quarterback in Nico Iamaleava. South Carolina is going to have a new starting quarterback in Lenoris Sellers. There's certainly going to be plenty of other quarterback battles around the league. Kentucky with Brock Vandegrift, a guy who transferred over from Georgia to Lexington. So we've got a lot of guys who are returning who are very much smack dab in the Heisman conversation. Can you take your team to a national championship? But I always get excited at this time of year for, okay, fast forward 4 months from now, who are we going to be talking about every single day that we weren't even close to having on our radar back in July? And those are some of the things that excite me a ton. And we're going to have a lot of that with quarterbacks this upcoming season. So I'm pumped for the season to start diving into some of those storylines.
Yeah, comparatively to last year's SEC Media Days, Alyssa, I think where we had three quarterbacks last year, I think we're going to have a couple more in Dallas this July. Which, speaking of, I have good news for you on the All-Pro Roofing Hotline. Tickets for that Wednesday night Dallas Wings game against the Indiana Fever and Caitlin Clark, you can now get in the building for $134, down from $300 last week. So if you're down, I have said I'm going to purchase tickets, and I've already told Greg Sankey that, hey, listen, if you want to make that the Wednesday night activity, I am down for it.
How awesome would that be? I love what you're throwing down, Mia, but like, as the resident Iowa Caitlin Clark person, I'm just going to leech off of you, and I'll just hit you up for a ticket. Right. I'll join happily.
Exactly. I'm gonna just start like putting out the feelers now, and you know, I'm not going to go alone, or maybe I will. So hey, if you want to come, I'm all ears. I'm ready to go.
I'm totally in. I love it.
All right, Alyssa, we really appreciate all your insight, and you know this will not be the last time we dial up your phone number.
I love it. Ladies, keep crushing it. Great to talk to you.
Thank you so very much, Alyssa Lang. I just tweeted out a picture back when she joined us October 2017. It was Halloween. And I said, okay, everyone has to dress up for Halloween. Alyssa showed up. She was like, I'm not doing that. She wore black and orange. She was like, I just don't have stuff to dress up.
And I've seen plenty of you on the text line who were like, I want more on this player. I want more on that player. You can, of course, find Alyssa on X, and you can, I'm sure she'll be talking about on SiriusXM plenty of those players. It's at Alyssa Lang on X, and I'm sure we will have her on again before the season kicks off.
All right, we'll get it back to Jaguars football when we return on Helmets and Heels on 1010 XL 92.5 FM.
This is Helmets and Heels.
Kept classy by First Coast Lighting and Fans. Upscale lighting, fans, and home decor.
On 1010 XL.
Thanks again to Alyssa Lang from SEC Network for joining us, talking all things SEC talking women's college basketball. She's always such a great resource to have, and we certainly look forward to having her on for many, many, many weeks to come when it comes to college football and everything else. All right, so when it comes to the Jaguars, the position group that you are most concerned about.
RJ, let's also make sure we get our friends involved in this conversation. Let's post this on our social channels, but also let's phrase it again for the YouTube chat line, the MyBookie Digital Studio, and of course the text line. What position group are you most concerned about when it comes to the Jacksonville Jaguars? To which I say, corner number two. It hurts me to say it because I've walked around the building the last few days and I've been pretty adamant that unlike the edge rusher position where there's a question of are there enough bodies, there's not a question of if there are enough bodies in the cornerback room right now. They have done a very good job over the last few years of developing young corners, even if they're backups, and there's quality depth to be had there comparatively to other teams in the league or even the Jaguars 5 years ago where the position was a turnstile once you got past the first two to three corners. But with that said, I do have concerns about if Ronald Darby, who was healthy all of last season, I know he missed one game last year, but if he was to miss time, which we don't wish upon anyone, who steps in? We saw Buster Brown step in against the New Orleans Saints, perform admirably, basically won the game on the final play of the game in NOLA for the Jags. And so I think he's an admirable guy, could step in and help you for 3 to 4 games. But I don't see him as the corner who would start opposite Tyson Campbell. And the bigger reason for me why I say cornerback is because Tyson Campbell is entering a contract year, and I've heard from many of you on the text line and on the MyBookie YouTube chat line as well, saying that you believe, akin to Josh Allen last year, Tyson will step up, he will be healthy, and he will perform in this contract year. But what happens if he has an injury setback? Then you're relying on Ronald Darby and a bunch of young guys, which, again, I've said it a couple of times this week that, like, if you go down the line of NFL teams, I mean, hell, you could go all the way back to when Darius Williams rose from an undrafted free agent out of UAB via Jacksonville to starting opposite Jalen Ramsey for the Los Angeles Rams, and they went to the Super Bowl and won a Super Bowl. Like, you could argue that, hey, he wasn't the signature number two. It wasn't an A.J. Boye opposite Jalen in L.A., and they got by, and I believe that. But what happens if the number one isn't performing at the level that you hope they would be?
Yeah, I think that's the question is who, if Tyson Campbell goes down and you have, you're assuming as of right now, Ronald Darby starting opposite Tyson.
That would be scary a little.
Who then fills that role and how does that look like? And then so certainly I think depth at that position is scary.
Yeah, I think the positive thing is that if I'm guessing each of us are going to name something that it's more of a depth concern. If someone goes down or if this doesn't work out.
Yep.
But I think that, do you want to continue on the other side or do you want me to say my answer?
No,
okay,
yeah,
we'll continue because I know I could argue three different positions, but I'll pick one.
We will have that as a tease. Taylor will give you her answer to that question and you can give us yours on the text line, Design My Lifetime Enclosures, on the YouTube chat line, in the MyBookie Digital Studio, certainly on Twitter or X as well. You are listening to Helmets and Heels on 1010 XL 92.5 FM.
Helmets and Heels is switched on by
First Coast Lighting and Fans.
Upscale lighting, fans, and home decor on 1010 XL.
We talk a lot of Jaguars on this program, but just programming note, on Friday we'll talk Orlando Magic basketball and Kentucky Derby.
Yes, the Kentucky Derby is here, and as much as we have a question of the day already out on X, and we'd love for you guys to chime in on the text line or the MyBookie Digital Studio chat line with what position group you're most worried about with the Jaguars, I almost want to throw out an impromptu question of the day after what our videographer, engineer extraordinaire, John O'Leary, just told us at the age of 25, he says, I'm worried that young people are not as interested in the Kentucky Derby as they used to be.
Yeah, that his generation will
be the
it.
One that ends horse racing, which I said, it's a cultural thing. You have to a regional thing. I get that. But I don't know about you guys. Like, I love a good derby party. Like, I understand it's
fastest
the one
2 minutes in sports.
It's the one day of the year that I care about horse racing. But like, I go back to 2017 when I was living in the Midwest. We went to Chicago for the weekend, and there was this huge sports book that this pre sports book and pre gambling being legal, but they were able to do horse racing bets, and I made a nice little chunk of change, and I was like hooked. I was like, it's one day out of the year, and it's fun to care about the horses.
I have a friend who a few years ago gave me some dresses that she wasn't going to wear anymore, and one of them has horses on it. So now once
that's your
year,
derby dress,
that's my derby dress. All right, Taylor, back to Jaguars football. Which position group are you most concerned about?
So I could truly make an argument for a corner. I could make an argument for edge, but I'm going to go offensive line. I just think that they are one injury away from it looking almost identical to last year, and we saw what last year turned into, and that's being Trevor Lawrence being injured pretty much the whole second half of the year, and you don't want that to happen. I think that there's questions with Ezra Cleveland because a lot of people are like, okay, well, he was injured. We really didn't get to see fully what he could be. Okay, he was injured almost all season long, and that can't. He was also injured years before too. It's always kind of been a thing with Ezra. Injury issues have been a talk with him and surrounding him. So if he's healthy, great. Maybe we'll see something. But to me, I don't have the confidence that these guys can all stay healthy and stay on the football field. And I also, and like I said, if one of them go down, I just feel like we're back in the same spot that we've had before, and we've pounded the table all offseason about how we need to protect Trevor Lawrence, how important this year is for Trevor Lawrence when it comes to, you know, we're talking about contracts, we're talking about what the future holds for Trevor and what the future holds for Jacksonville. And at the end of the day, everything starts in the trenches. And if the line isn't what it's going to be, and I'm not even confident full right now of the level they'll be at, I do think they're a little improved from last season, but that is not a very high remark at this moment. But I just think that it's going to look really bad if Mitch gets hurt, or if a Cam gets hurt, or if an Ezra Sheriff we saw kind of have a little step back last season. So I definitely have a lot of concerns with the line still.
And I can understand that. And I think that's where a lot of people are, because like you said, toward the end of last season, it was an atrocious performance by the offensive line. And so, yes, you take Luke Fortner, you put him on the bench, you take Mitch Morse from the Bills, and you have him the starting center. But to his left, Ezra, hopefully healthy, yes, but he was there last season. To the right, you got Brandon Sheriff. He's been there for two seasons. You got Anton Harrison, who played extraordinarily well, and you've got Cam Robinson, who was in and out due to injury, suspension, all that stuff. Obviously, they believe those five guys are going to be able to not just protect Trevor, but also help run the football.
That's what I was about to say. That's also important, because you couldn't last year
Correct.
At all.
Right. You couldn't run the football, and you had Trevor sticking his arm out multiple times, you know, and you don't want to see your starting quarterback have to do that. So that's what they believe. But right, I can understand the concern, because it's really not something that we've seen together. We haven't seen any of them together before.
Yeah. RJ put up our question of the day. What position group are you most concerned about for the Jaguars 9 minutes ago? We have 10 replies on Twitter already, and six of you have said the offensive line.
And I can understand that, because, again, all the talk about, quote unquote, running it back outside of just the center switch. But obviously, I will always am going to be optimistic and hope that they have their belief, I suppose, is correct, because their belief in their offensive line a year ago ended up being the one thing that none of us really like honed in on, that the offensive line was going to be a massive problem. We just talked so much about edge depth, which, by the way, I do think depth at the edge position, if something were to happen to Trayvon and Josh, as of where we stand right now, that is the biggest concern.
Yeah.
But as far as the starting part is concerned, yeah, I think starting second corner opposite Tyson, offensive line is a thing. Another position I'll give you an edge concern for me, or sorry, a depth concern for me, running back. If something happens to Travis Etienne, I don't yet have enough faith in Tank Bigsby to be able to help Trevor that and the offense that much.
Interesting. That's an interesting one that I think is a little outside the box.
I liked what I saw out of him in training camp, but when it came to the season, we saw nothing but issues.
Two things to that. And again, I don't know who will be calling the plays next year, but I can just tell you that Doug Peterson was not happy with two things. One, the structure of the offense by season's end. And number two, again, the magic word for the next few months, the onboarding process. I'm not going to blame him, but I am going to say that I heard from multiple coaches that the decision from the play caller to not give the ball to Tank Bigsby, to not get him out of the doghouse, because the only way he's going to get himself out of it is if you let him play. And I understand ball security is the most important thing, but when he showed you some nice things against the Titans, and what was that week? What would that have been? Week 10? I believe it was week 10 when they came to Jacksonville. When he showed you some nice things, reward him.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, he doesn't know where he stands. And I don't care if it's football or any other profession. You can't operate and you can't perform at your top level if you don't know where you stand with your management.
Yeah. We will continue this discussion on the other side, as well as get to some changes when it comes to NFL pregame shows. You are listening to Helmets and Heels on 10 to Next on 92.5 FM.
Light up your lunch with Helmets and Heels.
Presented by First Coast Lighting and Fans
on 1010 XL.
Taylor Dalmio, Brian RJ Saunders, I'm Lauren Brooks. Let's get to some of these responses. I'm going to laugh at a couple of them, Taylor, because a few of them say quarterback.
Oh.
And that this team's biggest concern is the quarterback. I understand people haven't seen out of Trevor Lawrence what they expected to at this point in his three seasons here in Jacksonville. But if your biggest concern is quarterback, then unless you are afraid of him being injured, but that's offensive line, then I think that's funny to me, because I think Trevor Lawrence is certainly a guy that can lead this team to the promised land if he is protected, like we keep talking about.
I've seen a few wide receiver ones, which is interesting too, because I just think that
they must miss Calvin.
Yeah. Or they're not high on Brian Thomas, maybe.
Maybe.
And that's maybe some of their reasonings. Because I think that when you look at other places, you could arguably say, edge pretty quickly. And I think I'm surprised, honestly, we haven't seen more edge. We've seen a ton of offensive line on here. And
edge depth is because people are thinking more about the starters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think that for some people, it's the same situation. And like the other ones we've said, hey, if one person goes down, if Trayvon or Josh go down, what do you do? I mean, you're hoping Travis is the Travis that you saw a few years ago.
Yeah. I suppose between now and the start of the season,
you hope somebody else is there.
Yeah. You would add someone.
Yeah. So that would be a point, though, like that.
Exactly,
you would want
that
added.
Yep.
Yeah. So that's why it's interesting, but it is a whole lot of offensive line. There's some edges on there. I've seen a few of when we're talking about I've seen a few general managers on as the answer.
I saw one on I posted it to Facebook, and we saw one for concession stands.
That's good.
That's the group that they're most worried about.
Yeah,
they quote look all high and mighty behind the sneeze guard.
I cannot.
That's a new one. I've never heard of the plexiglass wall referred to as the sneeze guard. So write that one down, folks.
904-633-2000 is the number for the actual Jaguars. So if you have any concerns for the building and or concessions or anything like that, you can take that up with them. But I do find general manager kind of funny, because we're clearly talking about things on the field, but people, I said this yesterday, I said it on Monday. Yes, there are just some people that do not like him, and they will not like him until the end of time.
And by the way, I know Johnny O joined Jaguars today, John Osher of Jaguars.com, and he and I have had so many conversations over the last few years, and I think it's important to reiterate, he did cover Peyton Manning and the Colts during their Super Bowl era, and he said, people in Indianapolis were extremely frustrated with Peyton at times. They would call for his job. And now when you look back on that nearly 20 years later, you're just like, why? Why would you call for Peyton Manning's job? Any team in the world would give up everything for a Peyton Manning in his prime right now.
Because he had all those interceptions early. And people don't allow for growing pains.
Yeah. No, it's a what have you done for me lately? It's an instant gratification society we live in. And that's
why. Well, it's honestly gotten even worse.
Right. That's why these quarterbacks get 2 years. And if you don't show it in 2 years, despite being thrown into the fire, then good luck with your next team.
I think Patrick Mahomes is a case study for he didn't have to start right away, but people don't like to remember that part. They just like that Patrick Mahomes, the moment he started, was excellent. Okay, fine. And then, of course, CJ Stroud did start right away and had such an unbelievable season with such few interceptions. So people also are now going to use that to their argument of, well, if they're not good right away, then we don't want them to be the starting quarterback. And I think certainly for teams like the Bears or the Patriots or the Commanders that all just drafted guys 1, 2, and 3, you've got to give them time, and you got to add weapons, which certainly the Bears have done. I don't know that the Commanders and Patriots have done all that much for their starting quarterbacks, but you've got to give them time, and you've got to give them the, I think, grace in which to make some mistakes. And if I was an offensive coordinator or the head coach, if I was the play caller, I would want my quarterback, if he's trying to get the ball into a certain point, make some interceptions because he's pushing the ball downfield. But if there's a guy that is afraid to take those risks, i.e., in my opinion, Gardner Minshew, no offense to Gardner, but Gardner doesn't have the arm strength to be able to do certain things Trevor does. And so Gardner's going to take those kind of easy throws, and maybe that works for the Raiders this season. We'll see. But I'd way rather have Trevor trying to take those risks, like I said, and also be able to make spectacular plays than just have the short success across the middle.
Our text line number, if you would like to reach us and sound off on this question of the day, is 641-1010. Leave us a message there or the MyBookie Digital Studio YouTube chat line. Lauren, what's the number for the Jaguars again?
904-633-2000.
Okay, hit that number up to those of you who are responding now. With
I don't know why I have that memorized.
with the party button before the fourth quarter.
I just was laughing so hard. I start laughing and I see John O'Leary laughing behind me, and I text him. I was like, are you laughing at what I'm laughing at?
Look, there's nothing we can do. T-Roy's a very nice guy, but we don't oversee that, so you got to call that other number. That's not the number to ask us
about.
What
are they complaining about?
All right.
At the worst moments, I'm sorry. It was at the worst moments.
I think because I'm in the press box, I don't know that I'm as familiar with this.
Get online, my friend, because this has been the talking point. Even when the Jaguars were 8-3, people would find a way. Just be like, hey, like, Will Levis just threw this crazy touchdown. And yeah, the Jags are up 3 scores, but like, probably not the best. All right. Hey, listen, they have a script. They have a script. We respect and we appreciate our friends with Jags Ops. They have a very difficult job.
And by the way, the phone number I'm giving out is really for tickets. So tricked, y'all.
If you want to talk about the concession stands, the beer prices, someone just texted it. That's not us.
Jags season ticket, like, phone lines are blowing up.
Yes.
I love it.
Sorry, hey, we're only here to talk about position
groups.
While
I have you on the phone to complain about A, let's talk about B. All right, let's talk also about two NFL pregame shows that will look a little different this fall. So I'm not sure how much time these days people spend watching pregame shows. If I'm home, if it's a Jags away game and I'm home, I always like to watch the pregame shows. But I know everybody does things a little different these days as far as streaming and things like that. But on CBS, it used to have Phil Simms, Boomer Esiason, and of course, JB, James Brown, and other people. Now Matt Ryan steps in and those two older guys have been basically removed from the broadcast. And you can tell that they're not thrilled with this. Boomer Esiason simply said that this wasn't my decision, it was CBS's. Is this just a matter of out with the old anger, I should say?
I think so, and it's just difficult because we haven't seen this evolution in my opinion, like in our formative years, in our 20s, our 30s. We haven't seen this probably for 10 to 20 years. Name me the last new addition to that pregame show in particular, and I think it would be when
Nate
Phil
Burleson?
Simms... Nate Burleson, yes. Yeah. And then when Phil Simms moved from the booth to the studio. That would be the two most noteworthy changes. I think we've grown accustomed to that's the way it is. That's the way it works. Mm-hmm. Which, hey, listen, it's like any profession. You want to get some new blood in there, and it's names and faces that the audience is familiar with, and it's a seamless transition because they're regarded as the next rising stars in the industry. And I do think, and I'm glad we're talking about this, Lauren, I completely missed fellow Ithaca College Bomber Andrew Marchand of the Athletics report from 2 days ago about Jason Kelsey now joining Monday Night Countdown crew.
That's the other one. But which, by the way, for CBS, they did add J.J. Watt, as I think about it.
He was like part-time.
Yeah. So they have tried, I think, some stuff. But I think overall, when you tune into those shows, what you want is someone giving you a really good opinion and analysis. And mm-hmm. I feel like their show is a little bit more... let's just talk about what happened and not actually provide an analysis as to why that happened. So I can understand where people would maybe want to tune into shows where they're more opinionated. Mm-hmm. And in that show, like I said, I feel like it's more just like, let's all get together kumbaya on a Sunday morning and talk about football.
Well, there definitely is there's a whole other level when you have, number one, people like disagreements. We know, Mia and I talk about this a lot when we're talking about the multimedia and the social side of things, like, the negative posts get way more attention than the positive posts when it comes to anything. And it's like that for whatever. People like the clicks. People like to kind of banter and whatever. Some people can do it in a friendly enough way. Sometimes it goes a little far. But that's why, as much as I think we complain about some of the shows, like, you know, people complain about Stephen A. Smith, but they comment and click and watch because
exactly.
He's very vocal and he'll kind of have his hot takes and he stands on what that thought is.
Even
is
if he's
his
wrong.
Yeah, even if it's wrong. But there's multiple people like that, and I think our generation and beyond, honestly, like that because it just gives another element rather than like, okay, here's the story, this is what happened, here's how we feel, everything's great. People want a little more than that, you know? And so I think we are starting to see this transition, and even when we see stuff like the Mannings the Mannings broadcast and how Pat McAfee is right now. Like, they just like that more out there, vocal, we're going to tell you how it is. And also, we have experience with it, so we can go even more in depth than maybe some of these other people.
Yeah, and to your point, Mia, Jason Kelce will join Scott Van Pelt, Marcus Spears, and Ryan Clark on ESPN's Monday Night Countdown. And someone who won't return, according to The Athletic, is Robert Griffin III.
I liked him on the show.
I think just because he's in a college booth and he does have young kids, I would assume that's maybe why. Yeah. He's doing his own podcast now, too. And I would think because he's on NFL Live and, like, they bring him in for other stuff during the week. He's on Get Up, it feels like, a pretty decent amount of time. Not that Marcus isn't either, but Marcus isn't traveling on Saturdays to call college football games as well. And, you know, it's something Dan Orlovsky was up against, too, for a while there. Mm-hmm. And they do have young kids. So I would assume that would be why.
He's been a little wild this offseason, too. Like, RG3's been, you can tell, kind of is grasping at some of the hot takes because he went on his little rant that Caleb should pull on Eli Manning. And I remember everyone was like, what are you talking about? Let's just, like, tone it down a little bit.
Let's just get some traction online. I mean, we just had the conversation here. You know, you don't want clickbait. That's what all the good YouTube content creators that I've been trying to learn from as we really kind of refine and remold our multimedia content. People know what clickbait is in 2024 and they're not going to fall for it. And if you try to play them once with that, then they're not going to come back for more content.
That is correct. Another response to our question online as far as the position group for the Jaguars that you're most concerned about, is the offensive play caller a position group?
Yeah, I've seen that a couple times.
Just like general manager. No, that's not a position group.
Yeah, unfortunately, you know, it's not a position group. But, hey, maybe it's something that could also have concern attached to it. And look, I think that that's a quote-unquote position group that we can talk about and say maybe there will be change, maybe there will be depth added at that position, even though it's not a actual position group.
Right.
Comparatively to on Facebook, someone who said ownership. That's not going to change, my friend. That's okay.
That shouldn't change. Khan has given this city about has spent from his own pocket about half a billion dollars.
He's mostly concerned about Tony and his neck brace. Don't worry. Tony's going to recover. Tony will persevere, and we will see some sort of AEW spectacle, I am sure, in the coming weeks as he recovers from said injury. But on the subject of the changing of the pregame shows, we didn't even get a chance to really talk about this yesterday, the news that NBC could be lobbying a $2.6 billion price tag to try to get the NBA away from Turner. That's something that I just didn't see coming. And even for those of you who are nostalgic for the NBA on NBC Music, that would mean, to the studio show's point, that would mean the end of Inside the NBA, which is regarded as the best studio show, regardless of sport, right now in the game. And it would shift an entire landscape because it would mean that a third of those games that are right now on Turner properties would be on NBC and the other third would be on Amazon.
Ugh. People are not going to like that.
I think we've found from watching
Thursday
Night Football that Amazon hasn't gotten to the level of what these cable networks are able to do, and that is to actually get the entire broadcast out there to where there's no issues in the stream itself with that many people. I feel like
Amazon
wasn't
prepared.
Last year
their first year?
I think, yes.
Year one.
Right, Kirk?
So you would expect some improvements from that. But there were moments last year where it was lagging really bad.
Correct.
It would cut out. There was definitely some hiccup moments. So you would hope that certain things like that. But that's going to be a problem with streaming in general. When you're strictly streaming something, those issues kind of automatically come along with that.
Yeah, and I'm obviously not the biggest NBA fan. So when I see stories about the fact that NBA fans will find the NBA on whatever it's going to be on now that it's been on NBA TV, which is something that not everyone has, but the viewership is still high. Like, that's fantastic for the NBA. It's just something that I do feel like you have a certain age group as far as your audience is concerned. And I mean, I say that my parents are all streaming. Mm-hmm. Like, we still have cable in my household. Yeah. And
you're
my parents
just left behind.
Right. I am left behind because I want to have cable for as long as I can afford it.
What's I literally haven't had cable though? Since I was like 21.
Like, I just want to know, like, why is it an emotional attachment to cable? Like, because
no,
if you get YouTube TV, everything you get on cable is there.
Because I've done the math, and with all the subscriptions that you'd have to what I get now, I'm not saving that much money, and I would have to increase my internet as well because I still have a lower internet package, like as far as the whatever that is, gigawatts or whatever you talk about. I don't even know, but whatever the bandwidth is, my internet internet is still low and my cable package is still low enough that I would spend more, honestly, streaming with everything that I get now. Isn't that wild?
I just don't see that mathing.
Didn't you just see the story?
I don't know
too?
What your cable bill is.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm like.
Well, she's had it since 1970.
Right, so she's probably getting a prorated. Right, she's getting a rated.
I get a discount on it.
Yeah, no, because I know how much we were.
I wasn't born in 1970.
I'm kidding. I know how much we were paying here at 1010, which a shout out to Richie, our engineer extraordinaire. Round of applause, actually, RJ, because Richie doesn't get nearly as much love on the air as he should for keeping us on the air. I know we just made the move to go cordless here at the 1010XL studios. And look, this is streaming right now on Roku. And it just looks beautiful.
Look how beautiful it is.
It looks beautiful, Lauren. It's fine.
There's nothing wrong with streaming.
If I didn't tell you that, would you think this was on cable?
Oh, I mean, I've seen enough streaming now to know there's no difference in what it looks like. But I also like to be able to hit the last button and be able to go back and forth between channels without having to actually, like, change it from station to station and things like that. Like, I spend enough time around these people that have streaming, like I said, including my parents.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand how it works, and it's totally fine for everyone. I just still prefer cable.
She loves her cable.
I do. I love my cable. And I also think there are certain things that, like, for instance, Bally Sports, like, mm-hmm. you can get shut out if you don't have cable, mm-hmm. if it's streaming only. And so, but again, nothing against people who are cord cutters like y'all and like we are here at 1010. And one day, I guarantee they're going to come to me and say,
it's time.
You cannot have cable anymore. And I'll go kicking and screaming. All right,
they're ma'am, all the cords are starting to rot.
We've had people replace the cords. I promise we're fine. When we come back, we will go around the sports world. We will talk more NBA. Also, a huge game tonight in Jacksonville, FLA. Taylor, we'll talk about that and the importance of that when we return on Helmets and Heels on 1010XL on 92.5 FM.
Helmets and Heels.
This hour is brought to you by First Coast Honda Dealers.
Helmets and Heels.
Presented by First Coast Lighting and Fans.
On 1010XL.
There's going to be one upset heel again, Lauren. Because we saw someone on the text line, Design by Lifetime Enclosures, that wanted Taylor Doll to control the playlist today. Not a Taylor song.
She likes this song, though. This is
Nico
Moon.
Like the last one was just a Chiodo song, so they must be in my music realm person.
Right. This is the guy that I got to see this past fall at the Seawalk Pavilion for free.
Oh, yeah.
Whenever there are free concerts, especially country concerts at the Seawalk Pavilion, I will be there, which, speaking of that, June 8th, there's a free country concert there. It's called Jack's Beach Country Fest. It's literally as if they asked me.
Yes.
Well, what would you like?
Does the lineup here today, Lauren?
Does the lineup meet your expectations?
I think so, because I really like this guy. He's fairly new, but the headliner is Chase Beckham.
Oh, yeah, 23.
Yeah, 23. Really good. I like his other music way better, but obviously they're not going to ask me about the set list. But, yeah, so that'll be a lot of fun. And, yeah, this, like I said, Nico Moon, we just talked about him because we had a song with Nick yesterday. And, by the way, Taylor, someone asked me yesterday, what was the first song in one of the breaks you all played coming back? And I was like,
was
Red Baron. It was the...
Oh.
All right.
It's wild.
Yes. All right. So we are going to talk all things or sports in all different realms in this segment. And one that had us all laughing had to do with a certain baseball game last night. And it's not the base brawl between the Rays and the Brewers. That wasn't so funny because there were actual punches thrown. But it had to do with a certain buzzing creature. RJ, take it away.
Just a moment ago, he threw out the ceremonial first pitch. They just announced that he's going to be available for interviews in the press box at 8:45. Matt Hilton, 37-year-old, father of four, movie star, good looks, now a superstar. You can't make this up.
The movie star good looks, that's my favorite part, because, of course, you can't see him at first because he's in the beekeeping
right,
costume.
They are quite literally talking about a beekeeper, folks.
Yes. Correct. And then they're like, movie star good looks because he takes the beekeeping
thing off. He flips it off so dramatically.
He knows he looks good, and then he threw out the first pitch after he rescued the
How
team.
Long was the delay?
2 hours.
It was two hours.
So that's why they were, like, standing ovation.
And then it was a walk-off win for the Diamondbacks, which I found fantastic. Because at least if you're going to wait for that long for a game to be played, you're going to have an exciting ending.
Yeah, because at one point, I don't play fantasy baseball, but Kevin obviously does. And so I looked over at him, and I'm like, hey, have you looked at the Diamondbacks game at all? And he's like, no. And I'm like, oh, it's delayed, apparently. And I showed him the picture of the beehive that had developed behind home plate. And, you know, we both agreed, How did you not see this earlier in the day when you were watering and tending to the field? How do you not see
this
massive honeycomb? Somehow they didn't. I want to know how far the beekeeper had traveled to get there. Do they keep him on staff? Does he work in the area?
I bet he's close by because you can have bees pretty much anywhere. Mm-hmm. Like I know people that have had bees.
Do the Jaguars have a beekeeper on standby? I need to know.
I just think it's funny because imagine getting that call. He's like, hey, this is the Arizona Diamondbacks. We have a situation down here at the ballpark.
And he says, no problem. Puts on his hazmat suit and he runs down there.
So one time I was talking to somebody and I was like, oh, so where are you from? You know, what does your family do? Whatever. And the person was like, oh, I come from a bee farm. And I was like, oh, that's so cool. I was like, a bee farm. All right. And so eventually I was like, so tell me about the suits. Like, are they hot? Are they expensive? And he looked at me and he was like, I said beef.
Oh.
Like cows, beef farm. And I was like, oh, well, bee farm was way cooler than just beef farm. But if ever you find yourself in a situation, you have to get them to clarify bees or beef.
Please look up the video if you haven't already. Just search Diamondbacks beekeeper. The audio was not exaggerating. This man just leaned in all the way to the bit. He was just parading around, and it was as if he was born to throw out the first pitch.
Yet again, the connection between Mia and Taylor is strong, as right now Ryan Poles is on the Pat McAfee Show, and he's talking about drafting Iowa punter Tory Taylor. So literally y'all's worlds colliding. I'm just here to watch the collision. All right, let's get it to the very important Game 7 tonight, Taylor. I know you'll be there rooting on the Icemen.
I will be there. Unfortunately, I've gotten many tweets and texts today being like, they won when you've been there. You've got to show up tonight.
There we go, people.
No fear, guys. Taylor Dahl will be in-house watching the Jacksonville Icemen tonight for Game 7. Obviously, win or go home. And a little frustrating. They're up 3-1 in the series. Started really hot. Everblades are so annoying. They just are that one that won't go away. That just annoying
team. They're the bee.
Yeah, they're like the bee in this situation that just won't go away. So hopefully... I just want people, obviously, pack out the house. I heard there wasn't a ton of people. I know it's a Tuesday game and a little more difficult for a lot of people to get out there like that. But Game 7, if you want to move on, come cheer on the Icemen tonight because it definitely is, like I said, I mean, it's the season ending or the season continuing.
And people can still get tickets right now. Just go to JacksonvilleIcemen.com. Mm-hmm. And look, like you said, I think it's important to get out and pack the ice.
Yeah, it's Game 7, win or go home.
Yep.
So, or stay home. So if you haven't been to an Iceman game, you know, a lot of people believe she's the good luck charm.
That's right. Game 7 hockey is so stressful, but I'm ready.
Do the Icemen have the party button that the Jags games have?
Maybe I could do that.
You can be the person to push the party button.
Taylor's going to get on the mic. All right. But you'll do it in the pregame.
Yes.
One of our Heligans has some intel for us.
Ooh.
Thank you to 318. The beekeeper ditched his son's T-ball game to go tend to the bees.
Oh, my gosh.
Last season for T-ball, too. He skipped the last game of the T-ball season.
But you know what his son will remember? His dad saved the world.
Yeah. And his dad whipping his blonde hair out of his hazmat suit.
Maybe the kid can get the next first pitch.
Yes.
He would have to start at, like, just where the grass starts, but it's fine.
Yeah, exactly. Or maybe the dad can throw out the first pitch for the next T-ball game.
Yes, yes.
Even though it's next season. All right, let's get it to NBA playoffs. I saw this stat as everyone else did. LeBron, Steph, and KD, as in Kevin Durant, will not play in the second round for the first time in 20 years.
Whoa.
RJ, I told you off air yesterday, I'm sorry about your Lakers, but you weren't that surprised, were you?
Absolutely not. After LeBron James said what he said in his post-game exit interview of sorts that, you know, he doesn't know whether or not he's going to be back with the Lakers this year. This is now the fun time of the LA Lakers, the off-season. Who's getting fired? Who's going to be on the team next year? Is LeBron going to be on the team next year? This is always an exciting
time
for
Lakers. Are they
going
to draft Bronny James to convince LeBron to stick around?
Well, there was a report that immediately came out following LeBron James saying, I don't know. There was a report that came out, I'm drafting Bronny James.
Goodness. Isn't that no surprise? Because he said none of us think his son can actually play.
It's the collision course we've all known. It was always going to happen. It was always going to be that little piece of fruit or meat or whatever dangling
the carrot
dangling in front of you because it is something LeBron wants to do, and respect to LeBron, but I also think, and I've said this multiple times, Bronny James is a good college player. I'm not so sure he's this elite NBA talent that merit being drafted in the first round or second round for that matter.
He averaged like 5 points a game. Can we even say he was a good college
player?
He's
a glue guy. I mean, and that's the thing. And RJ and I have talked about it. Like, his ceiling is 8-9 points per game, 7 assists per game, 5 rebounds a game, 5 assists, or five steals per game. You know, like that's his ceiling. He's going to do all the little things for you. He's going to facilitate. He is not a shoot first point guard. He is very much a pass first point guard. And that's okay. There's a role for that in the NBA. I don't foresee it translating into a first round pick. And if his name was anything other than LeBron James, conversation.
RJ, what happens, because we've seen in this last couple games, a couple tantrums from LeBron James. What happens when his son Bronny is the reason they lose a game?
I don't think he's going to have an opportunity for that. Yeah. I mean, that's genuinely my opinion. When I look at this, once the draft comes around, let's just say you get to pick 17, which the Lakers are presumed to pick, I would be looking around in the war room saying, God, are we doing this? Are we drafting Bronny James Jr.? To me, this would be no more than a photo op for he and his dad. I think he spent and then they bring him up for a couple games, but I don't see him playing clutch minutes for a team who reportedly is saying they're still in their window. I just don't think a guy like Bronny James is going to help you win 4, 5, 6 games to keep you, you know, out of the play-in tournament. This is going to be very interesting to see. Presumably going big game hunting this offseason, you're hearing Trae Young. You're also hearing Donovan Mitchell. So are you going to give up your 17th pick in next year's first to give to an Atlanta, to give to a Cleveland, to get a Trae Young, to get a Donovan Mitchell? Keep LeBron James happy. Because concerned about is LeBron James' happiness. Get out of my life, LeBron.
I should probably be concerned about winning.
Well, that's the irony of this is that the knock has been the Lakers supporting cast is what has held them back the last 2 to 3 to fortify that supporting cast by bringing in a guy who's a questionable second-round draft pick.
Yeah, exactly. All right, let's talk about what's going on in the social media realm when it comes to Deion Sanders, a.k.a. Coach Prime. I saw someone tweet him, tell your son to stop acting like he's the coldest out here, and then put up a 4-8 season, to which Coach Prime responded, he will be a top 5 pick. Where today, LOL. But also, Taylor, there's been stuff going on with his son and another player who transferred out that basically told The Athletic that he felt like he was mistreated.
Mia and I were having like a field day in the office today reading all of these tweets, because Prime was just going at it. Players were going at it. But it all started, so The Athletic wrote an article and they posted this in a tweet saying, Deion Sanders recommended Xavier Smith hit the transfer portal. Any others, he didn't. During spring practices, Smith felt like an extra in the background of a reality show. Frustration set in before he eventually left for Austin Peay. And so his comment saying, I was actually getting, this is from Xavier Smith, saying, I was actually getting mad, like tears coming to my eyes, because, bro, you never even tried to get to know me. And then another comment from him said he was destroying guys the way he did it. It could have been done with a little more compassion. So this was posted by The Athletic. And then so his son, Shedeur Sanders, quote tweeted this and said, I don't even remember him, to be honest. Bro had to be very mid at best. So this just started like a war, because then players start coming off of,
by the way,
very
rude.
First of all, like, you are the quarterback and leader of a team.
Correct.
And you are a guy that, number one, let's just talk about how many guys just hit the transfer portal from Colorado. So there's obviously some issues there of people like feeling the way that, you know, Coach Prime coaches, how players act. A lot of players have commented about how it's more of like a reality show is the word that this kid used. Oof. But there's a lot of other players saying they care more about like the showbiz side of it, and like being popular and being famous and being talked about in articles and on shows, rather than actually winning football games. And so this kind of stirred all of this stuff up. So other players were getting involved in it, because then tweeting Shedeur's comments talking about, well, you here's your stats, maybe you should check yourself of what you did last year. And then he would quote tweet, then Coach Prime this and starts going in at kids that are in college football,
like with a stream of consciousness tweets about like, I ain't for everybody. And look, the bottom line that we're burying here is the fact that they had, 53 players enter the transfer portal
since
the end of the season?
Prime said it doesn't matter because they were backups.
Right.
Which
that's after last season, in which when he inherited that roster, players remained. That's not normal, even in the age of the transfer portal. And it's only amplified by the fact that he's out here tweeting through it and calling players that were on his roster previously mid, or if he's not, his son is.
Yeah.
And that's where I think the conversation Taylor and I were discussing, it shifts to Shedeur Sanders'
his son and
draft,
being drafted.
Right, yeah. His draft stock in 2025.
Yes.
I see 34 player transfer class.
So it's 34.
Yes. 34, which is 61%.
What they brought in last year, or that's what they've signed so far?
No, that's who's leaving after the end of this past season.
Okay, I had seen that number was up to 50. So
like a combination of the two, maybe.
Right. Last year was at 50, and then this year. I know last year they were entering year one.
Well, talking about the draft stock for next year, and we just went over some way too early mock drafts yesterday that had Shedeur at top 1, 2, 3. And then now you're starting to see people being like, okay, well, is this really going to work out? Is this player going to be someone that someone's wanting to draft that high? And then so that started even more conversation because Coach Prime, I think you read this one, he said he'll be a top pick, talking about his son. Yeah. Where's your son going? LOL, right. I got time today. So then other people started getting involved in this. A guy named Quincy Avery, who's a quarterback coach. He was Deshaun Watson's and Justin Fields' quarterback coach, quote tweeted him and was like, let's be honest, your son's not even going to be in the like a top 10 pick, let move on from this, da da da. So it's just started a war, and it just honestly it looks very toxic to me in the stance of Coach Prime, because you're sitting here, you took over an organization that you already had questions in the beginning, because I remember that kind of like getting onto the guy like, get out of here if you're not going to be like, you know, this type of guy, whatever,
pack your Louis Vuitton.
Yeah, you're, and it was already, but then it looked like they were starting hot, so people are like, okay, look, he's doing the right thing. And then it kind of seemed like it fell apart a little bit, and now you're seeing all these players come out and talk about how toxic the environment is. That is not how you're going to get transfer portals. That is not how you're going to recruit.
Yeah, he is a guy, in my opinion, who he's, I feel like he's got too many plates in the air, mm-hmm. right? And so he's trying to keep his image up as far as, like you said, magazines and TV shows. Then he's got his health issues that he has to deal with. Mm-hmm. Then he's got the fact that he's got multiple sons on his football team, so he has to be dad and coach. And then he's got the fact that, yes.
His image of Coach Prime,
correct.
And me being who I am.
And then, so here's the stat, Mia, that you were talking about. Season, they had 51 transfer additions. 35 of those are no longer on the team. So just last year, he had to bring in 51 players.
So it's almost 90 of the 51 in two
players,
seasons.
And then this year, 34 have seen the mature one. And if I was a mom of a college football player, I wouldn't want them going to play for Coach Prime unless they were one of his favorites, right? Like Travis Hunter is obviously one of his favorite players.
If you're
players.
His guy, great.
Right. And but I at least from the outside looking in, it sure seems like he plays favorite. All right, we've got one segment to go here on Helmets and Heels on 10 to Next on 92.5 FM.
This is Helmets and Heels.
Kept classy by First Coast Lighting and Fans. Upscale lighting, fans, and home decor.
On 1010 XL.
By the way, earlier I mentioned that there was a base brawl last night between the Rays and the Brewers. Okay, so if I was playing baseball and someone from the Brewers and shoved me first and then I attack back, should I be suspended for 3 games if they're the one who started it?
It's Major League Baseball. Yeah. You're not allowed to have fun, Lauren. You should know that.
And I guess you're not allowed to fight back either. But I feel like if someone shoves or punches me first, whatever allegation, they should be the ones spending, not me. They're the ones who started it. But I guess it's like, you know, with your sibling, your parent doesn't care who started it. Oh. They just care that you both get in trouble. And so
that's who they saw throw the punch.
Right. Yeah. Jose Siri was the one who I'm talking about to say assaulted, but he was certainly attacked first last night by the Brewers. And then when he fought back, he now has a 3-game suspension, which he will appeal. Both players got ejected, but I don't think he should be suspended for more than like 1 game.
We're happy to see some of our friends on the Bookie Digital Studio YouTube chat line have now looked up the beekeeping video, the other big story to come out of Major League Baseball last night. Not the walk-off for the Diamondbacks, not the brawl, the beekeeper. So we're just spreading the good gospel of good sports crazy stories right now.
Speaking of good stories, certainly not crazy, but Constellation Furyk and Friends tickets are already on sale. They went on sale earlier today. And did you see who will be performing for the concert?
I did not see.
All right, it will be Tuesday night. And the answer is Brothers Osborne.
Ooh, the pride of
I love Brothers Osborne. I've seen them quite a few times because they've been here to Daily's Place multiple times. And so
I know
excited.
I know a song, but I can't think of it.
First one they ever had was Rum. Mix it with Rum.
Oh, yes.
They have lots others than that. But so again, tickets are on sale, not just for the concert that benefits the military, but also for the actual tournament, which is October 4th through the 6th at Tim Aquana. If you've never been to Constellation Furyk and Friends, the golf tournament, it is so much fun. So highly recommend buying your tickets to that. Just a reminder also, Jacksonville Iceman tonight, Game 7 against the hated Florida Everblades. Make sure you are there for puck dropping at 7 and cheer on the Iceman. Tickets are at jack.com. I will be also downtown tonight, but I had planned to go to Jumbo Shrimp before I knew about the Iceman. So going to the Jumbo Shrimp game with my parents and Brian, and the Jumbo Shrimp did lose last night 7-6 against Scranton, but tonight first pitch 7:05. In terms of college baseball, Florida won a midweek game, so there's that. However, the score was 10-8 when it comes to beating FAU.
I also have another important sports update that I almost let us wrap the show without saying.
Okay.
Lauren, as you know, on XL Primetime, we used to refer to the Florida Gators as the spring sports school because of the success of the baseball team, of the gymnastics. Golf team, gymnastics, and in recent years. What if I told you, combined with Todd Golden's success in year two, mining the transfer portal, that Florida, get the round of applause ready, RJ, is set to become a Division I hockey program as well.
Oh.
Let's go.
I'm interested to see then, based off of Title IX, if you add a men's sport, you'd also have to add a
I wonder if sport? Women's lacrosse actually maybe cancels that out because Florida doesn't have men's lacrosse.
Florida doesn't have men's lacrosse, but they do have women's lacrosse. But you'd think that they would have already been able to add a sport. So maybe that's
where they find
either way,
it.
Maybe we'll find out they're going to add another female
sport. But yes,
sport.
Shout out to all
that's
my...
That's exciting because they're Fernandina really
crew,
good in club.
My Fernandina crew informed me the D2 AAU College Hockey National Champions, the Florida Gators...
Yes.
Are making the jump officially to D1 starting
that's awesome.
Next.
And Taylor, you know this too, that people are starting to think of Florida as, certainly Jacksonville, as not just a good baseball area and football area, a good lacrosse area, but
that definitely.
Sports migrated down, and now a decent, it's still growing, but decent youth hockey area.
Definitely, and it's something that for a long time there just wasn't the opportunity here. They didn't have places to play, so the kids that did play hockey had to go down to Tampa, where some of the leagues were down there. I know Lauren Rue, her kids went down, she had to make the trip to Tampa like every weekend for her kids to be able to play hockey, and so now we have that opportunity here. You have the Ice, obviously, who have been able to build a huge following to the point where we had one of the fans, Mike, at our remote last week, and he said there was like a big group that went to the Everblades play. So these people are traveling mid-weekend to go watch the Iceman play. And then now also with all the facilities, obviously with the Igloo, there's just so much more opportunity for the kids to play. It's just a sport that before you couldn't even really introduce them to, and now you can. Even here, Chris Gripp, one of our sales guys, his kid Max plays on the youth league, and it's so, first of all, it's adorable seeing kids play hockey, but he loves it. He's obsessed with it.
Yeah, I love that. All that story. Back to baseball before we wrap the show. JU beat nothing in 8 innings last night, so once again, JU on a tear right now. They are at FGCU at Florida Gulf Coast beginning Friday night at 6:30. UNF did lose to UCF last night 6-2. They were tied 2-2 in the 7th, but ended up letting that one get away. UNF is at Kennesaw State Friday night, first pitch, 6 o'clock. And when it comes to FSU, that series against 20th-ranked North Carolina State begins Friday, first pitch, 6 o'clock. And so that is going to wrap the local baseball. Again, get out there and cheer on the Icemen tonight. And thanks again to Alyssa Lang for joining us, SEC Network. If you missed that, of course, you can find that on demand. For Mia O'Brien, for Taylor Dahl, for RJ Saunders, I'm Lauren Brooks. Don't go anywhere. XL Primetime comes up next. These heels are made for talking. We will talk to you tomorrow.